Welcome to the mystical world we live in with Almi. This hour, you will receive powerful revelations of a world where mystery and miracles are commonplace. Here's your host, Almi.
Our listeners, this day, this is a very special day, in fact, because we are starting our new 13-week segment. These shows, although they deal with your questions, tackle topics based on what we gather from your emails and from direct questions that come to us. And so we start every 13 weeks anew with the questions that we've gathered, and we also try and group them into themes. And so this is the beginning of a whole new 13-week section. So welcome, and also welcome to Rogier Sade, who is here today to ask us the questions. Rogier, welcome, and thank you for all the trouble you took to gather those for us, and just take it wherever you want to.
Okay, well, you are welcome. The first question comes from, is really from a conversation I had with one of the masters from the last pod, and that's Gary. I don't think he would mind me naming his name, but he asked quite an important question, I think, especially for cerebral people, and he said, you know, he was describing how for the first 3 days in the pod he had quite some resistance, you know, from the intellect mind, so to speak, but then in day four, something broke through, and in his own words, the magic began. But he was asking me at the end, and I promised I would get him an answer, you know, what to take back with him now that he would have to go back into this, you know, the other normal, so to speak, world again, and how, you know, what to do about his intellect and this sort of more linear mind who is, you know, inclined to rebel at a lot of sort of quite wild and out there stuff that he encountered during the week. So I think basically the question comes down to, you know, how do we placate the surface mind or the intellect?
Well, teachers that teach according to the Toltec traditions, which has been much of my life has been in the Toltec traditions, and they are Nahuals, and a Nahual is somebody that has a very specific configuration of fields of energy. However, Nahuals teach from different directions, meaning that even though technically there are no more directions because space folded in as a reality in October of 2007, but still there are characteristics that are indicative of what perspective a Nahual uses with one goal only in mind, and that is to break the tyranny of surface mind, which is what you're asking about. So Nahuals will tackle it in different ways. I try and combine as many techniques that other Nahuals would use into a week's experience, which is what, for listeners that are new to our vernacular, is what we call a pod. It's a class, if you will. However, it simply is that the group that gathers walks my walk with me that week, and as always, every day brings enormous amounts of new information and insights. So, to make a little bit of sense of all of this that I'm saying, my particular bent or proclivity, if you will, is to lecture or teach from the East. Now, each of these directions, if you have a specific way of loosening the grip of surface mind. In the East, and this you will find throughout my books, because my books are designed very specifically to release the tyranny of surface mind. They tackle it from different directions because folks have themselves different inclinations, but that is the bottom line. The Eastern Nagual is called the philosophical Nagual, and what they do is that they stretch the mind. So the mind has to kind of readjust itself and accommodate it. Then they stretch it further and further and further until finally the mind cannot accommodate what is being said to it. And so it has to either rebel and walk out of the class, which normally will happen if it's going to happen in the first 2 days, or it has to relinquish its hold. So in other words, one way to get that the mind to be still is to think thoughts that are so big that the mind cannot grasp it. And it has to eventually, after I'm sure some rebellion, it has to admit defeat. Now, in the Master Gary's case, he had that happen to him during the first few days. Every time he thought that, you know, with a very good, brilliant mind that he has, that he can hold on to it, I stretched it further and further and further. And the books and the material that we produce is designed to take the mind beyond where it can go, releasing its grip. But he had what a southern Nagual would normally provide. As well, in that a particular week that you're referring to that I remember very well, the southern Nagual will give an experience that the mind cannot explain. It's very experience-oriented in terms of its teaching. When you are, as a Nagual, guiding students into mastery from the South. So in the South, an experience happens. Now, my brother Gary has been very linear in his thinking, and all of a sudden, he was able to not only speak, but hear, if my understanding is correct from the experience that he had, he not only spoke the language, but he could hear the mother speaking to him. That is an experience that his linear mind cannot explain, that suddenly he would become fluid in another ancient and very holy tongue. Now, the tongue itself as an experience changes the way the mind works. For example, if one speaks some of the Native American languages, particularly the ones in the Northern Americas that come from Lemuria originally, they are very right brain oriented. If you speak them, your concept of linear time and planning and things like that, completely different. Some of the tribes did not even plan their battles. They either showed up or they didn't. And because everybody knew they were functioning from the one heart place that the right brain represents, a lot of this is determined by the languages one speaks. So not only could he not explain the language that he suddenly spoke and heard and was able to understand, but secondly, the language itself will make him more right brain oriented. So that's number two. That's another way to release the tyranny of mind. Number three is to see things and experience things that cannot be explained. For example, in that pod, we had a situation where many of the Star Brothers were coming in from different planets, and we actually encountered races that we never even knew existed. Incredible races. Well, he was there for that experience. The mystical experiences, or what you perceive as in the mystical, stretches your boundaries beyond where right brain can go. So, you know, we can go on and on with this, but essentially, the North, on the other hand, is the place of mind discipline. It is the place where yogis often teach from, the absolute discipline of mind and subjugating it to silence within, sometimes through grueling practices of sitting under water dropping on your head but having to achieve silence, sitting in a pit of snakes having to achieve silence, all these things that have been done through the ages are designed to with discipline, bring mind to heal instead of it being the tyrant. So those are all methods to get mind to heal. Normally, when we run a week, by the end of that week, someone leaves in mastery, as you know.
All right, but that's true. But I was wondering, because I think, having said that, he was specifically, you know, indeed looking for, you know, what might be really a technique to sort of, you know, now that he's, you know, gone back into the ordinary world, so to speak, and, you know, he was already sort of sensing that he might have problems with his
The integrating.
Yeah, and so, you know, I think he was really looking for what kind of magical tool might be invoked to sort of, you know, to sort of battle that part of the mind, so to speak, or to pacify it or whatever, but something like that.
All right. Well, there's several things that we can use as guidance for him with that. And that is always a problem. I mean, some of my students schedule a few days before they go back into their job after a pod week simply because they can hardly cope. And often also massive clearings happen because when you shoot upwards in consciousness as rapidly as those experiences allow one to do, you will in fact detox heavily. So a lot of water is in order and so on. But aside from the physical detoxing, which he, you know, increased water is the preferred way to deal with that, to remind yourself every morning that you know nothing. To take a hold of the glimpses that you have, if you have to get a calendar that shows the cosmos, a book that shows the cosmos, something that reminds you that from the vantage point from which we live, the vast majority of reality is the unknown. To remind ourselves that every morning before we begin the day, that's number one. Number two, if in one's lunchtime, you even can make a 10-minute little block of connecting with the infinite. And we have got a wonderful meditation series that show you how to do that, and if you do them at home at night, eventually you can just slip in and out of it. And I can't remember what they're called, but my office will know. There's a series of meditations that guide you to do exactly that. So if for the 10 minutes you can just connect with what is larger than yourself, then in the evening, if you will take time to learn the lessons of your day by looking behind the appearances. And it seems like it's not relevant, but it is, because mind takes life at face value. If we look at what is really going on, and in the ripples of irritation or the ripples of reaction, you will find the areas of your day where the insights lie. But you look behind those appearances, and it starts teaching the mind to be silent so that you can see with the heart. So those are the three ways to fit into a busy life. Of course, there's, you know, more profound ones for people that want to take their time. Let's go into just one of those. The eternal time is not meditation. Eternal time is really what meditation was designed to lead us to. To be in eternal time is to be in full awareness to the moment. There is no next moment, there is no past moment. The way a child would respond if you put them in their little crib out on the lawn on a nice sunny afternoon just to experience nature. Every moment is vibrantly alive for that child. They don't worry about paying bills or whether they remember to turn the laundry on or whatever. They don't think of whether they're acceptable. They just experience. The most profound experience is to schedule a few days, turn the television off, turn the phones off and faxes, and any contact with the outside world. Eat when you're hungry, sleep when you're tired. Don't listen to music. You know, if you're going to watch the odd video, it should be something that is eternal, like, you know, the winged migration or something that does not have a storyline, that is just a beautiful documentary, perhaps, of nature, but it should be very sparingly. The goal is to watch the sun come up, to watch the shadows play, to just be. If one can do that, at least an hour in the weekend, a whole weekend if you can, a whole week if you can, it puts you into the most profound bliss. When thoughts arise, just like meditation, you don't engage them. You just watch the thought and you watch it sink again. You don't engage it. You just stay with what is there right now. That is the other way, because mind has a dialogue as resistance to life, which pulls you out of the moment and into linear time. As you do this practice of going into eternal time, you feel the tension release out of the body. Rogier, you know, I think we should take a quick commercial break, and when we come back, you can ask the next question.
All right.
The Complete Power Of and the Mystical Keys series of radio programs are a part of the Premier CD set. They are available from Al Mean at www.spiritualjourneys.com. Request the entire Premier CD series set or the new book, Aruba Farina, The Book of Fairy Magic, by calling 502-499-0016 today.
The brand new book, The Gift of the Unicorns, is now available from Al Mean. The magical book answers a question: do mystical creatures like the winged horse Pegasus, mermaids, and giants truly exist? What is their roles, and how can they be called upon for assistance? In their own words, the unicorns reveal where they went during the ages of darkness, their heroism in preserving purity and innocence, their golden shoes, and the secret mission they undertook for the mother of all creation. To receive your copy of this amazing book of sacred secrets, The Gift of the Unicorns, go to www.spiritualjourneys.com or call 502-499-0016 today.
Welcome back. And we will jump right into the next question, Rogier. What would you like us to take a look at?
Well, actually, I did want to sort of touch upon a few things which you mentioned in your previous answer. First of all, about you said that you had sometimes have people walk out of the class. Could you explain, you know, I mean, it seems to be something that happens occasionally. I mean, could you explain how that occurs?
It is very fearful to let go of the prison bars of one's belief systems. In fact, if one looks at the book, Secrets of the Hidden Realms, where we explain the levels that man evolves through to get to mastery at the apex of human experience and beyond, you will see that the beginning of each of the major stages, the testing of it, is fear. It's possibly the only place on earth, because of the assignments we've been given directly from the mother and the father of all life, where in 1 week you will actually have those fields around the body transfigure and transfigure and transfigure, going through stage after stage, till you end up in the place where there is an option to have a silent mind. Now, that which we term mastery. So, as you go through these various stages, it can be quite fearful, because the belief systems are cozy and comfortable, and they totally trap you into a lower awareness. But letting them go initially can be fearful. That's why it's so helpful to do it in the presence of the other masters that are there that have already gone through it, so they can say, yay, you arrived, you know, and don't be afraid. This is what you're experiencing. But they make contact with the infinite. And also, we're at the cutting edge where today's information isn't yesterday's information. I'm constantly proving myself wrong, because we're able to understand the changing, the changes that take place cosmically, meaning the nature of life. And so when people think they know when they come to the class and they've held onto that for dear life, and then suddenly, you know, it's their belief systems are dashed to bits, that's a fearful time. And either they have the wherewithal to walk the path into mastery and push beyond it, especially once we explain to them why it's happening, or, you know, they prefer to go back to the cozy and the comfortable.
All right.
And you know yourself that when people encounter the unknown, they are either going to attack it, ignore it, walk away from it, or they can obsess about the questions, and because the answers continue to change, it could make them frustrated, and then, you know, they could walk away. The way to approach the new information is to believe without believing. I yesterday thought of this analogy. All the stars in the heaven move, except the North Star. It's the one that stays stationary all night long. And that the only truth that we can always count on is that we are the infinite's children, and it's a divine heritage from loving mother and father. That is the one truth. That's the North Star. Everything else changes as life evolves. So there's the river of the stars moving through the sky, and that island in the middle of the river is that North Star. So it's pretty scary to have all your belief systems go out the window.
Yeah, and I recall that for me, what was always the best way to tackle the matter of the sort of, you know, linear mind trying to sort of intrude is to understand, you know, that it always wants to get the why and of things, you know, even though it really can. And it always tries to attain a position which it really can't either. So, you know, what's the point of even trying it that way?
And the addiction to know is one of the largest addictions of humankind. The humility to know that there is everything to learn and nothing to prove is not always present.
Well, that's interesting, the addiction to know. Is there anything else you can say about that?
The reason that the addiction to know exists amongst humankind, because I was very careful to make that clarification, the addiction to know does not always exist among other more ethereal races. But humankind has a very, very special role. Number one, they are the densest level. There isn't a denser being, more corporeal, more dense in their matter than humankind. This has an advantage because something is forfeited, and when something is forfeited, the law of compensation in the cosmos recompenses with a different advantage. For instance, people that might be blind have very keen hearing and other senses. Well, the denser the matter, the more focused your perception, so that your perception localizes like a very bright spot of little light, but that's all you can see in the dark room is this very bright, small spot of light. The rest of the room seems dark. For another one, let's take an angel, for instance, they see the whole room dimly. It's like a wide, the flashlight's beam has gone wide versus very narrow. Humans are very focused. They are extreme at problem solving in the cosmos, but they miss everything around the edges. So it's a little scary to stand in that small bright spot, knowing that this vast darkness around it exists that you can't see. And, you know, of course, the compensation that life gives for this phenomenon is that it makes it that physicality is, in fact, the only place where all true new knowledge is gained. That's the upside of it. But that is why human beings feel very insecure, because they know intuitively how much they're not seeing.
Hmm. Wow.
So they cling to every little piece of perceived truth, even though it may not even be today's truth anymore. That's why.
Okay. And there was something else as well I wanted to ask about. You talked about dialogue as the resistance to the moment. And I think you've said, we've spoken like that as well, of thought and thinking. But does that mean that every form of thinking is born of resistance to life?
No, it means that left brain dialogue is a resistance to life. Left brain's thinking as analytical is actually what it was made for. Its ability to analyze is like a sense. It's a specific organ with that sense to it. The analytical skills of left brain is not as a result of opposition unless it becomes obsessive. The obsessing about the questions that we asked earlier when encountering the unknown. And see, the truth of the matter is we live in the unknown. The dark room is all around us. And for others it may not seem dark, yet for man it does. So the vastness of the unknown is far more than our little bright spot of what we do know. And unless we constantly are obsessing about the questions in terms of analyzing what about this, what about that, analysis is not opposition. Secondly, the non-cognitive thinking that comes in the form of feelings. I feel nauseated in this person's presence. That tells me I'm in the presence of density or ill intent or agenda, or the lack of innocence, shall we call it. So those kinds of non-cognitive thinking does not arise as opposition. And the other type of thinking, which is not really thinking at all, is what I'm doing as we're speaking. As we're speaking, there isn't a thought in my head. My mouth, I'm simulating that there is by pauses and a slight stutter here or there, because otherwise it becomes too mechanical. I sound like a computer. But there isn't thought preceding my speech, nor the books that I write, in that my hand automatically writes them in longhand. It comes from the empty place. The only time that I will need to engage my thinking is if I need to analyze something. So the effortless knowing that I'm doing, that's not opposition to life. That's really a form of tapping into source.
Okay.
Oh, ask me where the source is.
All right. Where's the source?
Well, because I only learned this one yesterday, so I'm very proud of it.
Okay, please do tell.
Okay, well, you know, in the Sumerian and Egyptian art, we see this disc above the head, and often it's held up by two sort of horn-like structures, often also associated with Isis. The horn-like structures are actually the flame of the Kundalini fully functioning. That's split by this disc. And, you know, we read in the New Testament about the Pentecostal flame on the head that people had. That's the awakening of the Kundalini up the pranic tube and the spine. Then we have the disc. That disc is, in fact, the 10th chakra. Now, we write extensively about the 10th chakra, and for folks that want to check out our website, we may already have, or it is imminently getting posted, the changes that have happened in chakras, and you can see the Lahun chakra, the golden disc. Whereas the third chakra is yellow, the Haran chakra, which is located in the belly button area itself, is amber. This is a true gold. With the exception of the sacred libraries, the Lahun, or 10th chakra, holds the Akashic records. And so the effortless knowing that comes to you from all that is known comes out of the 10th chakra, the gold disc above the head.
Interesting.
Yes.
But I know that this is something we're going to have up on the website anyway, but when you just spoke of the chakra colors, were you were kind of presupposing the old paradigm there, weren't you, with the yellow?
No, those stayed unchanged.
Oh, right, okay.
The yellow chakra, the third chakra, and the Haran chakra are unchanged.
Okay. Well, and all that information we'll have up there sometime soon. Anyway.
Yes.
All right, and what did you mean by that space has been collapsed?
Well, it was in August of 2006 that Mother announced that linear time had ceased. What was not understood is how many, many, many factors were in fact causing linear time to exist. The major factor had ceased to be, which is the movement of awareness. Time was the movement of awareness across space. When awareness stopped moving, and we described this very carefully, what happened in 2006 in August, because if it's important to life workers, when the polarity reversed in the cosmos, that is described in The Ring of Truth. But bottom line is, it was announced time had ceased to be. But the cosmos was still moving along lines which actually are the lines inside Mother's spine that is similar to the lines out there in the cosmos along which the cosmos was moving up, up, up in its ascension. As the cosmos still moved linearly along a very specific line that looks like a DNA strand, there was still linear movement. So there actually still was a form of movement creating another form of linear time. Mother finally collapsed the directions, and what the directions actually consist of are vast bands that contain concentrated layers of very specific building blocks of existence. To explain what I mean, let's say, let me try and do this one really correctly for you. Okay, let's take the direction of above. The direction of above had as its concentrated form particles of life force. The direction of the north had as its concentration particles of awareness. Each of these bands of compassion that we've written about in Journey to the Heart of God as being the true nature of the directions actually had concentrated specific building blocks that set them aside from other bands. Now, those were the directions. Mother collapsed those bands into one field. This collapsed the directions. Later, she combined all the building blocks into one little building block called the particle of manifested intent. So all the directions were collapsed. The cosmos no longer traveled along lines. It stayed put and simply became more and more and more enlightened and involved. but it didn't have to become. And becoming became exponential rather than linear.
All right, but does this mean that, does it follow that any sort of spatial sense we have would be an illusion then, or is it different?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And it's very hard to explain spaceless space to people, but, you know, if you want to go there, we can. Let's just take a quick commercial break, and we'll see how gutsy we get with this.
Okay.
In this, the fourth book, The Ring of Truth, which chronicles Almine's journey, she tells of the promise and the potential inherent in the resurgence of the feminine principle, increasingly felt in all aspects of current human experience. The operation of new laws governing the cosmos are explained together with the reasons for their creation. We are introduced to Mother, the primal creative energy that pervades every aspect of existence. We learn of her love and her laws and how to incorporate them into every thought and act. We are given samples of her divine language, its meaning, and its power. Mother's great gift to humanity, the healing power of Belvaspada, is revealed. This new approach to dissolving disease of mind, spirit, and body replaces previously existing methodologies. Application of its techniques removes old barriers of physically oriented existence and opens a broad pathway to a life of joy and fulfillment. Discover Mother and the Ring of Truth, as well as all of Almine's books, CDs, lectures, workshops, or magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com. A Life of Miracles is a deeply inspiring and motivational book in its content. It is unique in its field in making man's relationship as the microcosm to the macrocosm understandable to both beginning and advanced readers. It's a detailed guide to living a joyous and balanced life that provides a carefully laid out map to achieving the magnificent destiny that beckons at the apex of human experience, that of ascension. If you're ready to ascend to a higher consciousness, begin each day with A Life of Miracles or any other books, CDs, lectures, workshops, or her magazine by contacting Almine at www.spiritualjourneys.com.
Welcome back. And we have Rogier Sade with us today, and he will be helping us with a series of shows again, as he did the last group of 13. And Rogier, where would you like us to go about this issue of spaceless space, or do you have something else you wanted to go to? We seem to have lost him. Rogier?
Yeah?
Oh, we're online. I thought we lost you there for a moment. We've already welcomed the folks back. If you can just please let me know where it is we should be going.
Oh, sorry about that. Yes, we're going to the concept of spaceless space.
All right. The issue of spaceless space is hard for our linear minds to grasp. So really it is better to disconnect it and just feel it with our heart. But what that means is that even though we are programmed to believe that the Earth is this tiny, tiny little speck in the middle of the vastness of the cosmos that, you know, people assume go on forever and ever, which it doesn't, but they think that as a human, so small, on top, you know, on top of the fact that the planet is so small, on top of the fact that even our Milky Way seems so small, makes us insignificant. But if space is not really there, if it is just an illusion at this point, that does also mean that size is nothing to the infinite. And every one of us is everything. An example of the spaceless space idea is given in the Book of the Unicorns, where the unicorns recount that there was a small group of them that was safeguarding a very holy object for Mother. And she'd put codes of creation into this stone, or whatever it was. I cannot off the top of my head recall because I'm translating other records right now. But the point is that they said that they had to safeguard it for Mother, and that she kept them safe upon her person, meaning that there was a little pocket of space created for them, and that they were kept on Mother's person inside the dense light. And I have another situation where somebody was actually killed by those who played the dark gods during the ages of illusion, that Mother kept that being until the light would yet again dawn, actually in a pocket of space that she kept underneath her hair. Now, the unicorns tell how even though in a pocket of space upon Mother's person where she safeguarded them, she was able to come and go and visit them. And they, in fact, tell us of the type of tea they used to brew for her that was her favorite, and a dance that they would do to materialize objects. And so they tell us how this is done. This is not something we can fit into our head. And so this issue of space to space, just understand it means size means nothing.
Okay, now you mentioned Mother's person, which would imply a physical body. I think some people might be wondering how to reconcile that with the idea of the infinite being as well, to have a physical body, which would seem to be kind of finite as well.
There are very, very deep mystical revelations around that question that you've just asked. And the answer that I would have given 3 months ago is different than what I would give today, because of the fact that cosmic life force, awareness particles, on and on, there were seven different building blocks, including the little tiny subatomic particles that is being studied in quantum physics. This is quantum physics, but it dealt with particles that were in other octaves of frequency, but nevertheless the building blocks. Now remember what we said earlier in the show. Mother did in fact collapse the big bands in the macrocosm, and what she also did is she combined all of the building blocks into one. That one particle has subatomic physical particles in it, as well as everything else combined with it. So Mother is made from exactly what everything else is made from, because there's only one particle. Now, this is true but not true, because in fact, Mother is what lies behind the particles. So she would appear to be physical to us. She would, in fact, feel physical, assuming that we could touch her without, if we were that pure and holy. The point is that she would feel physical. She would seem physical. Does she have to be seen by us? Well, let's look at this. Fairies are made of the same stuff humans are made of at this point. This was not always the case, but they are right now. However, you can have a middle C playing on the middle of your piano, and if you go up one octave, it's still a C, but it's an octave higher in frequency. If frequency goes up octaves, beings become less and less able to be seen by those at the lower octaves, even though they're still made of the same building block. Mother is physical, but not physical from the same building blocks. She is the force that lies behind the building blocks. But she is nevertheless what we would interpret as physical. Did I say that properly? It's a little bit complex. Let me try it another way. She's physical, but not of the same matter we are, because she's not made from the building blocks.
Okay, well, I'm sure this is a point which we will elaborate upon or expand upon in some of the podcasts, probably.
Yes, and they should watch for the podcasts, because we will notify you when we do free podcasts for you to see, and we're hoping even to do one for every day of the year, so you can take us to work with you.
But those will be the subscription ones, probably.
Yes, some will be subscription and some are for free. And they'll have to watch our website to see when they're up and running.
All right.
You know, Rogier, may I add something to what I just said, which the folks may actually want to know? We always assume that higher life, higher octaves of frequency is where life began. But that's not accurate. Mother created life by creating, first of all, seven little building blocks. One building block was six around it. That was, you know, like the seed of life. It was where life began. But it began from the physical. The one in the middle that the six were around, the building block in the middle, was a subatomic physical particle. Life began from the physical. Mother has explained this to me many different ways. It is from there that the higher octaves occurred.
Well, that's a few millennia of spiritual conditioning out the window there.
Well, and also, see, the physical mother, all these vast, you know, areas where mind is at rest and so on out there, it's but a reflection of one cell that is in her body. All that is out there.
But one
is
physical
but from
cell.
One cell. Pardon?
But this would be one cell in her physical body, right?
Yes, in her physical
yes.
body, but not as we know physical.
Okay. Now, we have a question here which I think seems to kind of tie in with what we've spoken of about space and linearity. namely, if the dark gods are now gone for good, or is there something which somehow inside the Cosmic Mother which gives life to them somehow?
What gave life to them ties in very well with the show, because what gave life to them is linear time. When you are in linear time, you lose your innocence, because innocence is only found in the moment. And so purity becomes corrupted, and Mother has diligently, at the beginning of 2008, been working on finding every single possible origin of linear time. And so if it arises, then some linear time somewhere has arisen.
Okay, well, I was wondering myself, I wonder how, you know, on the issue of space, because if, you know, the way in which it is now an illusion, does that not mean that our illusion of space is going to fall away at some point or be removed?
You know, I cannot answer that. I know that there are a lot of things that will definitely be changed, such as the fact that we see a different sky around us than there presently is. That is a hologram that's been kept in space, in place. Will the illusion of space be taken away from us? I have no idea. I'm terribly sorry. I would have to ask Mother.
Okay. Well, I'm sure we will someday. Do we have time for a question, or should we...
Now, why don't we take a commercial break, and we'll be right back.
Almine continues the exploration begun in her previous books, A Life of Miracles and Journey to the Heart of God, probing further into the nature and meaning of existence. Secrets of the Hidden Realms introduces the readers to the goddess mysteries as they apply not only to individual human lives, but to the cycles of the cosmos. From this background in the intangible functions of being, Almine is led into the dimensions of non-humans, interacting with creatures previously known only in myth and folklore, the inner relationships of fairies, dragons, gnomes, unicorns, and other elementals, and their influence on humankind is explained. vivid accounts of encounters with these beings and others existing as expressions of the widely divergent vibrations illustrate the essential unity of all creation. Journeying from these subtle realms, the reader is shown the ultimate expression of humanity, evolution into God-being. Secret of the Hidden Realms can be obtained from Almeen, along with her other books, CDs, workshops, lectures, and magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com. After 3 months of intense physical preparation in January 2004, Almeen experienced a transfiguration, entering the presence of the infinite for the second time since moving into God consciousness, the state of no longer identifying with the ego. In 2000, in the weeks that followed, the powerful revelations contained in this book emerged from that all-encompassing silence. Having lost most of her linear thinking during this transition, much of this book has been written without conscious thought. This form of automatic writing, like automatic speaking she now does, flows freely from source into her own handwriting from which it was transcribed. Few have entered into God consciousness to leave the bliss to teach. Still fewer enter the stage of immortal master and in addition continue to function among the masses. But as a Toltec Nagual and seer, Almeen's life is dedicated to leading others to complete freedom from mortal boundaries. Journey to the heart of God is an opportunity of a lifetime to see through the eyes of one who has encountered the indescribable realms of eternity. From such a perspective come insights that can heal the deepest wounds of alienation found in human hearts. Journey to the heart of God contains, no matter how profound, truth. Truth that can be recognized for what it is, and is the truth that shall set us free. Pick up a copy of The Journey to the Heart of God and discover your personal truth and freedom through Almeen's books, CDs, workshops, lectures, and magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
Welcome back, and you've joined us for our last segment of today's show. Andrew here, I think we have time for one or two questions.
Well, here we have one question, which is really kind of two questions or overlapping questions. It's how would you define the creative principle, i.e. of life, and how would you distinguish, I assume technically or metaphysically, the definitions of goddess and God?
All right. Let me tackle the second one first, just so people know what we are speaking of when we're saying someone is a god or a goddess. Now, first of all,
I think it actually refers to, like, the mother and the father, even though...
Okay, so the mother and the father. There is really only one being expressing as the many. And it is a being that is more feminine than masculine because of the fact that it has to birth life. To birth is a feminine principle. However, it has everything within it. So the embodiment of this being is where life originated from. Something that I had no idea of. I thought it came from the higher fields of frequency, and eventually there was a body that formed, and this was the Infinite Mother. But not so. The Infinite Mother's body is what everything else has originated from. Her first creation is the Father. Now, the Father was immaculately conceived at first, and then she realized that that it did not provide him with the best stability. So what she did is she actually pulled her masculine pieces on one side, her feminine pieces on the other side, and in a divine, hermaphroditic way, in fact, conceived and birthed the Father. So the Father is her first creation. The Father is also made from fields preceding the building blocks of life. In the fields preceding the building blocks of life that is in the Father, because everything is in the Mother, but a lot more in her than there is in the Father. But the Father consists of a field that has within it, the very nucleus of it is love, praise, and gratitude as a frequency. Around that is power, energy, life force, awareness, light, and love as an emotion, as well as perception, self-perception, and material, experiential wisdom. That's the next layer around the three. Around that, there are 12 states of praise. Around that, there are 20 states of glory. Then there are 33 creational codes, and there are 54 codes of existence. This is all mixed into a field. This is what the Father is made from. Mother and Father jointly have birthed the building blocks that lie beyond it. And from those building blocks, all life has formed. They are clustered into form and individuated and so forth, you know, and so creations occur. So this gives you a bit of a understanding of how creation takes place. Let's just then ask, because I hope, answered both your questions superficially, and I can take it a bit deeper.
Mm-hmm.
Is that okay?
Please.
Okay, so let's ask what creation is. When reading The Gift of the Unicorns and The Gift of the Cycles, people are amazed that Mother seemed for a time to be forgetful of her own glory and acted as though she didn't have enough power to sustain the perfection of the cosmos. Well, I'm hoping that, you know, at some point in the future we can explain to folks exactly why duality formed, and duality separates things so you can't see the whole tapestry, you can just see the threads. And that's what Mother went into for a very specific reason. Duality had a great purpose, but it's now obsolete. However, the power Mother has been operating on in running the cosmos has until very recently been the power found in one of the trillions and trillions of cells in her body. At any time she could have pulled in the power of all the other cells, but she pulled in the power of only one cell. The reason was she wanted to study the threads of the tapestry. But the entire cosmos is nothing more than an expression of Mother as found in one cell. Every one of our cells has a holographic whole of ourselves in it. In other words, the cell knows all of us from head to toe in our one cell. Every cell has that. Mother, as seen through one cell, is expressed in creation. Father has 5% of her cells worth of power, energy, awareness, life force, etc. And that only happened this morning.
5%?
Yes, of all of ourselves, which is trillions and trillions of times more than, say, the cosmos has, which it has only one cell.
Well, pretty impressive.
And up until this morning, Father had 5% of the power of all of ourselves, but he did not have 5% of perception, of awareness, of life force, of self-perception, but now he does. The only thing that he has only one cell of is light and frequency. And the reason for that is that if either Mother or Father get too light, what happens is an implosion and a black hole, because light is drawn to its opposite. And if they get too big, it draws the smaller lights in. So for the sake of the relationship of Mother and Father with their cosmos, that is what was given. It's time. time for us to close, unfortunately, and we are so happy that our listeners could join us. You are what makes these shows possible, and we are delighted to share our hour with you. Thank you so much, and we hope to join you again next week. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed today's show, The Mystical World We Live In, with Al Mean. Please join us again next week.